Good morning, welcome back to Nachyam. You just wanted to tell everybody that we're almost halfway through Sefer Shmuel Beis. So we're on the way, and now we get into some of the more heavy episodes of David HaMelech's life. This is the perek which books have been written about, just this single perek and perhaps the one following, and that is David and Bathsheba. There is no possible way we're going to be covering this in 10 minutes, so let's try to get some of the highlights. What actually happens? The perek starts with an introductory pasuk, which describes that this is the time of the year when all the kings would go out to battles, probably the spring season. This is happening where it's possible that the horses can run and battle can continue. But interestingly enough, David HaMelech does not go out to battle. He sends out his generals, and David is staying in Yerushalayim. While he's in Yerushalayim, one evening he is walking along his roof, and he sees down, obviously he's at the high point of the land, he sees down and he sees a woman washing herself on the roof. Clearly, you know, this was a private place for her, but the only building that was probably overlooking was David HaMelech's palace. She is a Tovas Mare Me'od. She is beautiful. David HaMelech went and sent to find out who she is, and it turns out that her name is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah Hachiti. David, who sends for her and brings her to the palace, has a relationship with her, and the Tanakh goes out to make special mention that he miskadeshes mitumasa, that means to say that she's not in the status of nida at this point in time. Then the Tanakh tells us that from that relationship, she is impregnated, and she sends to David to tell her that she is in fact pregnant. What does David do now? So David HaMelech sends for Uriah in the battlefront. He sends to Yoav, the general, says, please send Uriah Achiti back. And David brings Uriah in and says, David, how's everything? How's Yoav? Shalom Ha'om, Shalom Ha'milchama, everything's going. And David says, go home. Go attend to the business at home, obviously hoping that he's going to be with his wife. But the problem is that Uriah leaves in front of the Masas HaMelech, in front of the king's mincha, and he goes and sleeps at the door of the king's palace. And David says, Uriah, why are you doing this? Didn't you go home? Uriah says, but the Aaron of Yisrael and the men are all in their battle. They're all waiting in battle, and I'm going to go and have a feast. I'm going to go have, you know, my private relationship with my wife when all this is going on. I could not possibly bear doing that. So David says, okay, you know what? You know, just stay a day or two and I'll send you tomorrow. And Uriah stays for the next day and sleeps in Jerusalem. He does not go home. The next day, David HaMelech tries to get him intoxicated, but still he stays in the Beis HaMelech. He doesn't even return home to his wife. Then David HaMelech sends him back to battle. But on the way to battle, David does something extra, and that is he gives Uriah a letter, which is a sealed letter to go to Yoav, to tell Yoav that Uriah is going to be needs to be left in the heat of the worst part of the battle alone, so he should be killed. Yoav reads the letter, and in fact sends Uriah to the battle, but it differs a little bit to what David HaMelech says. David HaMelech says that he brings him into the battle. He brings Yoav into the battle. Where the fiercest part of the battle is, but a number of the people are killed with Uriah. So Yoav did not retreat or leave Uriah behind. A number of people are killed along with him. And then Yoav sends this complicated letter back to the king saying, a lot of people are killed in battle when we try to break the siege, it didn't work. And he tells the messenger, if the king gets angry that the many people died in this battle, and why we were in this in the first place, well, tell them that Uriah also died. Tell the king that Uriah also died. This is what happens. And David HaMelech says, okay, you know what? It wasn't a bad thing. You know, people die in battle. And as he says, Ki chazoy ko echazeh tochal acherev, the sword eats people in battle. This is what happens. And keep fighting the battle and destroy the city. As David HaMelech goes on. In the meantime, Tanakh makes clear that Bathsheba hears about this. She mourns for her husband, and after the mourning is over, David HaMelech brings her into his house and marries her. And the last words, the perek of Vayera Hadavor Asher Asa David Bene Hashem. This was bad in the eyes of Hashem. What happened? So a lot of things to think about. This is a very heavy perek. This is a very difficult perek to understand. First of all, first thing to notice, the Malbim points out, is that when does this all happen? It happens when, as the perek introduces, when David HaMelech sends his battalions out without himself. Meaning, when David HaMelech has time on his hands, that's when this can all happen. Sometimes it's good to be busy. Malcolm starts with a paragraph on that thought, while thinking about it in our own lives. It's good to be busy sometimes. So now, the Tanakh continues. The Malcolm has a really forceful essay on this entire parak, which moves its way all the way through the entire parak. And he presents two different poles of understanding this. And again, there's going to be so much more written on this, and I'll try to put more into the digest email, but really just to give you just two poles of what's going on over here. The Mari Karo, that's Rav Yosef Karo, not to be confused with Rav Yosef Karo of the 1500s, the Baal HaShulchan Aruch. The Mari Karo was, in fact, one of the Rishonim, one of the medieval commentators on Tanakh. And he says unequivocally what we would assume if we read this for the first time, just reading the Pshat in the Psukim, that David HaMelech sinned egregiously. He sinned in five ways, the Mari points out. Number one is, the most simple, is adultery. This is a married woman. He has no right in this relationship. Number two, he forced Uriah to go to his house to make it look as if Uriah is going to be the father of this illegitimate child. What's going to happen if this child now goes and marries a sister who is from the childhood children of David? And that would create a mamzer, chas v'shalom. What is David even trying to do? Number three, David HaMelech tries to get Uriah killed. Number four, he allows other good soldiers to die with Uriah. Number five is taking Bathsheba immediately after this whole thing goes down. After Uriah is killed, makes it seem like David HaMelech is still in the controls of his own passions, that he has to immediately go and get Uriah. So this is a very complicated, very, very complex area of Tanakh. This is what the Mari argues. The Malbim says, not so fast. Like when you read Chazal make it pretty clear. Kol she'omar David chato eino elo toe. Anybody who says that David sinned is making a mistake. Now, that's very hard to understand. How do you stomach that? I mean, it's, you know, Tanakh seems to indicate pretty clearly that he sinned. So the Malbim points out a few things. Number one is that if she really was an Eshes Ish, if this was a case of adultery, then David had no right whatsoever afterwards to marry her. That's the halacha. Asr labal, asr labael is the halacha, that in such an instance the relationship cannot continue. The fact that David HaMelech asks and consummates that marriage afterwards, and in fact requests and begs from Hashem that this should work out, is an indication that David HaMelech is clear that there wasn't a sin over here, and in fact Hashem does forgive him. To a certain degree, there's a certain amount of forgiveness. David has to stomach a terrible amount of punishment, which will haunt him the rest of his life. But nonetheless, Hashem does forgive him. We'll see as we see, which means to say that there was something over here which was that it wasn't as egregious as it may look. So how does this work? So famously, and many of us are familiar with this, the idea is that David HaMelech was very keenly aware of some of the halachic issues that went into battle. And so in those days, the procedure was that any soldier who went into battle would give a divorce document to their wife, whether it be a full divorce document or a conditional divorce document should they not return. The point is that when people die in battle, many, many times, unfortunately, they're buried very quickly if there are remains. And if they're buried by the enemy, certainly nobody's taking account as to who it was, where they came from, and taking down lists of names. It just isn't the way it happens, unfortunately. So therefore, there's going to be somebody at home who's maybe stuck for the rest of their lives not knowing if their husband was killed or taken prisoner. So David HaMelech said, let's make it simple. If your husband doesn't return from battle by a certain time, you're considered divorced. And that's simple. Simple as that. Therefore, David HaMelech, knowing this, whether it was a full divorce, had a certain grounds, knew that Bathsheba wasn't necessarily married, depending or maybe fully. And if you think about this carefully, when you look at the Psukim, David HaMelech doesn't just go and call her over just like that. He first sends his servants to work out who she is. First, he finds out that she is a wife of a soldier, which means to say there is a get there. Number two, she's the daughter of Eliam. Eliam is the son of Achitophel, one of David HaMelech's halachic advisors. David HaMelech realizes that it's not possible that his granddaughter, Achitophel's granddaughter Bathsheba, is going to be going without a get, without protection, if this is the king's advisor. So clearly he knows that this is the wife of a soldier. This is the granddaughter of the king's halachic advisor. She definitely has a get. That's the first thing David HaMelech realizes, which means to say there's a very strong likelihood either that it was a full get, or if Uriah does not return, that this is in fact going to be a marriage which is not viable at this point in time. Nonetheless, when she becomes pregnant, David HaMelech has to now change his tune, because you see what David HaMelech could do is he could let this go and let the baby be born in Betzina. But you know, the family's still going to know. She's still going to have the terrible embarrassment. Her family's going to have the terrible embarrassment of this relationship. It was clearly far enough away that Uriah could not have been the father of this baby were he not to come back from battle. And David HaMelech decided to take on responsibility in the sense that he wanted to He wanted Uriah to believe this was his child, and Aaron Menach would take special concern, says the Malbim, that this child should be in fact treated specially, that there would be no yichus issues for future. So Aaron Menach, in order to protect the state of Bathsheba herself, took on, we'll call it Plan B. The problem is Plan B didn't work out because Uriah didn't listen. So it does sound like Uriah was in fact a very honorable individual, the way he's talking about not leaving his fellow soldiers and the Aaron in the field alone. But nonetheless, he still disobeyed the king. He disobeyed to go down to his house upon numerous attempts that the king asked him to. In fact, it says he walked out in front of the Mincha, the Masa Samelech, which is another indication that he wasn't very respectful of the king. When he mentions the king's name, he mentions Yoav before the king. It seems that there is a history over here. There is more to talk about who Uriah is in previously, what the history is before here. But nonetheless, these comments of Uriah are clear enough to show us that Uriah is in fact defying the word of the king, which is called Morid Bemalchus, rebelling against the king, which is a liability, a capital liability. David Melech decides that he wants to send him off, but he doesn't want it to be that it's a capital crime that is going to be tried in court, because again, that will reflect badly on the relationship ensuing between him and Bathsheba. So he sends him off to battle in a way that nobody should be harmed. He tells Yoav to take him to the fiercest parts of the battle and retreat, leaving him behind, which means to say that, you know, he will be killed in battle, but nobody else, there will be no other casualties. However, Yoav does not listen and sends a bunch of people with him, and those people die. So it was Yoav's responsibility actually that the other people died. And finally, when he goes and marries her immediately afterwards, it wasn't because he was, you know, could not control his desire for her. It was simply because if she's pregnant now, the clock is ticking, and in order to preserve her dignity, to preserve their dignity, he needed to marry her right now. And this is the way the Malbim rereads this, in a very different way to the Mari Kra reads it. One last thing just to think about over here is, why is it that Yoav, in fact, gave different orders? Why did he send out a bunch of men with Uriah and did not allow him to perish alone? So the Chidah points out, well, Yoav thought that because Uriah was bearing the letter, you know, this is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in a later animation by Shakespeare, because he himself was bearing the letter himself, Yoav figured that really Uriah was liable for capital punishment for Morid B'Malchus, but Yoav had begged the king not to be obvious. And therefore, Uriah knew he was liable for death, and he was coming with his letter, knowing he was going to die, but he was asking for the death to be in a way that wouldn't look bad. So Yoav facilitated by making it look like a real death in battle, not a retreat. Unfortunately, Yoav misread the situation. You don't make, as the Chidah points out, you don't make assumptions when it comes to people's lives, and that was a mistake that Yoav made, in fact, but that was not David HaMelech's ultimate intent over here. So this gives a little bit of more of a background. As we dive into the next perek, I apologize, it's been a little longer today just because it's a complex issue. As we dive into the next perek, we're going to see some of the ways that Hashem responds. Last thing just to notice in the Malbim's reading of this is when it says at the end of the perek that Vayera Hadavar Beinei Hashem, and that the matter was bad in the eyes of God, it means to say on a social level, David HaMelech had not necessarily transgressed. It was on Hashem's perspective that their sin existed. And that leads us into the next perek. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.